This is The Takeaway. I'm Todd Zwillick, filling in for John Hockenberry. Thank you so much for listening. Senate Republican leader Mitch McConnell is taking another crack at passing his health care repeal and replace plan. Senate Republicans unveiled a new version of their bill on Thursday in their quest for 50 votes. Here's the majority leader.
This is our opportunity to really make a difference on health care. This is our chance to bring about changes we've been talking about since Obamacare was forced on the American people. It's our time to finally build a bridge away from Obamacare's failures and deliver relief to those who need it.
Well, in just a minute, we're going to go to McConnell's home state of Kentucky to find out how Obamacare has been working there. But first, Senate Republicans may or may not be able to pass this bill, but let's break down what's new in the Better Care Reconciliation Act and what a strategy to get the votes means for the health care of millions of Americans. Sabrina Corlett is here. She's a research professor at Georgetown University Center on Health Insurance Reforms, and she joins me now. Sabrina, welcome.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
And great to have you. We're going to talk a lot about what's changed in this new bill that Republicans have put out. But let's start with what hasn't changed. Is this a fundamentally different deal than before?
Not really. The fundamentals haven't changed all that much. For example, the earlier version had some big Medicaid cuts. That hasn't changed. The subsidies for private insurance were cut in the previous version and sort of realigned to favor younger folks over older folks, and that hasn't really changed. So some of the key fundamentals have not changed. On the other hand, they've thrown in a few things to try to appeal to the conservative wing and a few things to try to appeal to the moderate wing in the hopes of bringing the caucus together. And we won't know for sure how all of those changes will affect the ultimate coverage numbers and costs. That has to wait for the Congressional Budget Office. But my guess is that some of the big numbers around who's insured, who's not insured, are not going to change too much.
So let's talk about life on the exchanges. If you're a person who gets your individual health insurance on an exchange, maybe you get a subsidy, maybe you don't. What's changed in this version on how much you pay for your insurance, your out-of-pocket costs, your premiums, things like that?
Well, the biggest issue is that Senator Cruz, Ted Cruz from Texas, has put forward a proposal that's included in the draft that may or may not end up in the final version, but is certainly part of what is being scored by the Congressional Budget Office, a proposal that would allow for the maintenance of exchange plans, for plans that are fully compliant with all of Obamacare's consumer protections. But alongside them, insurance companies will be allowed to sell stripped-down skinny plans, deny these plans to people with pre-existing conditions. So essentially, you'll have two markets. Healthy people will be shifted into these what are called underwritten plans, where insurance companies are allowed to screen out health conditions, whereas sicker people will probably remain in the exchange plans. They will provide more comprehensive coverage, but they will be dramatically more expensive.
If two markets are created by the Cruz Amendment and all the healthy people go to cheap plans because they're cheap to insure, and all the sick people stay on the regularly regulated Obamacare plans, doesn't that mean that the sick pool is really, really expensive for people?
That's right. Most likely, the premiums will go up dramatically. Now, if you get subsidies because you're a lower income person, you may be insulated somewhat from that, although, of course, overall, the federal subsidies will shrink under this bill. Also, of course, if you are not eligible for subsidies, you could face significantly higher premiums under the Cruz proposal.
So we see a proposal then under the Cruz plan that sort of lets insurance companies bifurcate the market between younger, healthier people and older, sicker people, one of the key problems that Obamacare at least tried to solve. Let's also talk about Medicaid, because it's the other gigantic piece of this, Sabrina. 73 million Americans get their coverage through Medicaid. There's been a great deal of debate among those moderate senators about cuts to Medicaid. Has anything changed there?
Not at all. And certainly in terms of the rollback of the Medicaid expansion and the longer term reductions in the program, those are maintained, which is actually kind of interesting given that a number of the moderate senators said that that was really important for them. So again, we won't know for sure what it means in terms of how many people could lose coverage as a result of this until the CBO comes out with its revised score. But my guess is it won't change much because the bill hasn't changed much.
So a phase out of the Medicaid expansion and then a cap in the long term, in the out year, still in this bill. Sabrina, some people save for their health care with tax-free health savings accounts. They're already on the books. They're not super popular, but some people use them. Are there any changes to those HSAs?
Yeah, there's a pretty dramatic change. Under current law, when you have an HSA, you can only use it to defray your deductible or your co-payments, cost sharing under your plan. This proposal would allow you actually to use your HSA to pay premiums for a high deductible plan in addition to cost sharing. So that's a big change. Again, hard to know how much it will actually increase the number of people who buy insurance, because HSAs are really used primarily by high income folks who have disposable income to put towards the account. And of course, those folks tend to already have insurance.
Right. So what you're talking about is a universe of people who say, sure, I'd love to put money aside every month to pay for healthcare costs because I have money every month to put aside. And that's a particular group of people maybe who aren't the most important ones in this debate.
Right. I mean, HSAs are a terrific tax shelter for somebody who has the kind of cash on hand to put into these accounts. They're tax protected and distributions are tax free. So it's a great tax vehicle. But for the lower income folks, which is where the vast majority of the uninsured are, they're really not that useful because these are folks who just don't have that kind of cash lying around at the end of every month.
Sabrina, one of the consequences of long-term Medicaid cuts has been a lot of senators coming forward and saying, I have a drug abuse and opioid crisis in my state, West Virginia, Ohio, throughout the Midwest, state after state, unfortunately. If you cut Medicaid in the long term, that's where so many of these people are going to try to get off of opioids, get off abuse. It's devastating my state. Mitch McConnell heard these complaints for senators. So what's he trying to do about it?
Unfortunately, you know, the Medicaid cuts are still in place. So over the long term, Medicaid could not play as much of a role in stamping out the opioid epidemic as it has. However, they do create a fund for opioid abuse treatment and prevention. But I think it pales in comparison to the kind of coverage that Medicaid provides to folks who are battling opioid addiction.
Tax cuts that were originally envisioned in the Senate's health care plan for wealthier people, even for CEOs of insurance companies, are gone in this bill. Mitch McConnell wants to use the money to pay for some premium support, but really to pay for the opioid crisis in many of these states. The question is, will it get him the votes? And of course, how will it affect your health care? Sabrina Corlett, research professor at Georgetown University Center on Health Insurance Reforms. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you.